From education to employment and everything in between. It's a clearinghouse for all things shale. It's the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRosier and Rusty Fender.
Good morning and welcome to the Shale Gas News. I'm Bill DeRosier and I am broadcasting from beautiful, sunny Arizona today, DC Taylor.
Wow.
Thanks to the magic of Skype. And of course, you keeping us on the air. How you doing, DC?
All right, Bill. Clear across the country there almost. What you doing out there?
Well, first and foremost, this country is huge. You know, for those who have never actually traversed it, I'm only in Arizona. So there's, you know, a whole nother couple of hours of drive time or flight time to get to the West Coast still.
Yeah.
But it is beautiful down here. I have the pleasure of joining our friends from Camp Freedom down at the annual Barrett Jackson car auction, auto auction.
Yeah.
I believe it's the largest one in the world. And they have a unique opportunity. Shelby USA and Counting Cars, Counts Custom from the TV show, have built them a beautiful Mustang to auction off for charity, with all of the proceeds going to benefit Camp Freedom's mission. And when this got arranged, our friends over there were telling me about it. And I said, you know, this is pretty exciting. So I hopped on a plane, a train, and an automobile to get down here. And here I am in Scottsdale, which isn't, you know, as big of a struggle to think about, when, especially when it's cold, wet, and rainy back home, right?
Right. Of course.
But I've been here for a day now. The auction will happen later this afternoon. Well, the auction actually happens all week, but the car will be auctioned off later this afternoon. So next week I'll update everyone on how well it does at the auction, at the sale. But this thing is massive, DC, if I could go off on a tangent.
Yeah.
Something like 70 acres, the complex for the auction. And there's a combination of steel pole barns that are huge, like airplane hangars. And then connecting them are giant, like the biggest tents I've ever seen. But they're like permanent tents.
Yeah.
And I think they have something like close to 2,000 cars on display for the auction.
Wow.
And it takes it'll seriously take you an hour to walk from one end to the complex, like to the other end and back. And they have other stuff. I had no idea. There are other things that they auction off. There's memorabilia. And then on top of all of that, they also have boats on display, tractor trailers on display, hot tubs, lots of hot tubs for some reason. Like there's almost like a sales component. There's artists from all over the world. They have stuff on display. So not all of that will be auctioned, but there are huge like vendor spaces. And then you can go outside and there's even more cars and more vehicles. And they have a band playing like basically all hours of the day. There's a band and a concert going on. Outside, I found the giant displays for Pit Boss and Big Green Egg and all that kind of stuff. There are tracks where you can get into a car and they'll take you on a drifting circuit or on an off-road circuit, like all included with your price of admission.
Yeah.
So needless to say, I'm overwhelmed and I'm, you know, a day and a half into this thing and I still don't truly grasp everything. But what I can appreciate is just the beautiful cars. All the different shapes and sizes, the custom cars, the original cars. It's like history under one roof. And again, not being very knowledgeable in the auto world or auction world, it seems like this is a good year. Folks are saying the crowd's back up. They expect a couple hundred thousand people to come through this thing from all over the world. And then on top of it, I think people are pretty happy with the sales. It seems like people are spending and bidding up these automobiles.
Right.
So I look forward to updating everyone next week on the success of the Camp Freedom auction, and hopefully it brings in even more than they expect. Because again, all of the proceeds will go to supporting the mission of Camp Freedom, a tremendous organization benefiting veterans, first responders, their families, and of course, Gold Star families up in Northeast Pennsylvania. But what's fascinating is they have veterans and first responders coming in from the entire country. I think they're up to 40 or 45 different states. Thousands have already gone through it, and they're looking forward to 2023 and beyond to continue expanding their mission.
Excellent.
And hopefully, DC, I'll bring you home some of the beautiful weather that we are experiencing here.
That'd be nice. Yeah, I know we're looking forward to a very cold weekend, possibly next weekend. So yeah, after that. So yeah, you bring it in right after that.
All right. Well, this is the Shale Gas News, a show dedicated to helping you understand why energy matters in our lives and why we need to make informed energy decisions. A couple of news stories I'd like to share today. Energy experts say the U.S. is behind Europe, but energy crises could happen here. Cowboy State Daily is reporting that a continued increase in wind and solar on the U.S. electric grid has strained energy resources during extreme weather events, according to grid reliability assessments. But fossil fuel-powered resources have prevented the kinds of problems sweeping across Europe this winter. As Germany has done in the past few months, the United Kingdom is bringing coal plants back online and even offering money to citizens to cut down on their energy use because wind energy resources just aren't providing enough power. Rick Wetbeck, Alaska State Director for Power the Future, not-for-profit pro-energy organization, told Cowboy State Daily this week that the United Kingdom's power company should be held accountable for failing to provide a reliable grid and for throwing money at the customers to get them to reduce their demand. It's something we talk about on this show at length, ad nauseum.
You know, we are lucky to be part of the PJM grid where we live in Pennsylvania, just because of the reliability, the affordability, and accessibility of energy that we have regularly. PJM continually produces more power and supplies that to other neighboring states and other grids. And it just puts us in a great position whenever we have these weather events. And I think it can be used as an example of how an energy policy should be adopted, not only here in the United States across the board, but in other countries across the world. One of the driving forces behind PJM is reliable energy derived from natural gas, coal, and nuclear. And what the balance of those three energy sources gives you is reliability, accessibility, and flexibility. Coal and natural gas can be revved up. They can be turned on. They're reliable whether the snow or the wind are coming. And nuclear has become really a good, solid, steady state, a foundational energy source. Doesn't really go up, doesn't really go down in terms of its production. But what we have is that steady supply of energy. Other places around the country, and Texas is a prime example, we saw it a couple of years ago, have overbuilt and over-relied on solar and wind, especially down there in Texas. And you think of that, that's kind of ironic because it's the oil and gas capital of the world. But you look to a place like Europe that really went all in on renewables and solar and wind. And outside of, let's say, large hydro, which is very reliable, the solar and wind are intermittent. And when solar dies down, it leaves you in a dangerous spot if you don't have backup energy sources. And this article is discussing that because places like Germany and the United Kingdom are constantly having to bring back online the coal plants that they have worked so hard to shut down. What's the solution here? We've discussed this over and over again. Continue building out natural gas power plants. They're affordable. They're easy to build out. You can build large ones like Invenergy or Moxie Freedom. You can build small ones like the IMG power plants, which are rural distributed 20 megawatt units that can be turned on in 10, 15 minutes time and shut down even quicker so they can meet the demands of the energy grid, especially when the intermittent sources like solar and wind fail. So it should be a wake-up call, but we've been doing this show for how many years now, DC? And we continually talk about this issue over and over again.
Right.
And hopefully, whether it be the demands that have been placed on us because of COVID, inflation and supply chain issues, the war in Europe, people wake up and say, we need to invest more in United States oil and natural gas, the infrastructure to move that to market, and then the infrastructure to convert that into the resources we need, whether it's power, consumer supplies, medical supplies, fertilizer. It's the feedstock of our lives. We shouldn't vilify it, and we should continue to expand it. Seems pretty common sense, right, DC?
Of course, yeah. Gonna have a variety of ways to get our energy, so we're not the eggs in one basket thing, cliche, but that's what a lot of places are doing, and it's not good. It's not practical.
And, Exactly. And I didn't really address this whole thing, but the article also discusses how utility companies are throwing money at consumers to turn down their energy needs. First off, our populations continue to grow. Our need for energy continues to grow. And that shouldn't be a negative. We should find ways to be more efficient and produce affordable energy. But just the idea that a utility company that already charges us so much money would turn around and then offer that money back to us to turn down our energy. Well, then why are you collecting that much money to begin with, DC?
Right. Exactly.
I'm sure people would rather have that money right now in a high inflationary period.
Yeah.
Republicans launched newest fight against the Biden administration's oil drawdowns. Republicans are aiming to neutralize one of the main tools of President Joe Biden's arsenal to lower gasoline prices. He used it especially before last year's election. His prolific release of oil from the nation's Strategic Petroleum Reserve has lowered our stockpiles to the lowest seen in decades. And of course, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve is originally designed to be a large reserve of oil and other oil products, specifically to assist the United States during periods of weather, war, natural disaster, and or support our allies around the world. What it was not designed to be was a price manipulative tool wielded by whoever controls the White House leading into elections to try and control the price of gas at the pumps, especially when that same administration has been doing a lot, everything in their power just about, to try and force us to transition to electric vehicles and to reduce our reliance on oil and natural gas through regulatory changes, through trying to block sales of auctions of land and just not being very friendly to the oil and natural gas industry. So what the Republicans are trying to do is prevent presidents, this president, President Biden, and presidents in the future from being able to wield it as a political tool, which it was never intended to be. And I do agree with that. I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat. It should not be something that they can just use willy-nilly whenever they need to influence public opinions, especially when the answer is so simple. Have the oil and gas industry produce more here domestically, remove the roadblocks, extend the olive branch, work hand-in-hand to build the infrastructure that we need.
Right.
U.S. natural gas falls below $3 for the first time since May 2021. We've always talked about this, D.C. It's a cycle, up and down, whether it's natural gas, gasoline prices, or oil. U.S. natural gas futures extended declines below $3 amid a mild winter, which has really only sparked more of a sell-off among the country's commodities. Gas delivery has hit as low as $2.85. Across different exchanges, including the New York Mercantile Exchange. So 2021. So again, I look back to it. Over the last year, the oil and gas industry has received a lot of criticism for bringing in record profits, and they're greedy and they're corporate profiteers stealing from you and I, DC. But keep in mind, prior to 2021, 2019, those years, the price of natural gas was below $3, and in some cases, it was below $2. And those companies were struggling, pinching pennies, making costs, you know, being very responsible, or some were being irresponsible with their handling of money. But the reality was, nobody was calling on them then, or shedding light on the fact that they weren't having record profits then. So it's a double-edged sword. The energy industry goes up and down, but the reality is this. We all are in a much better place when the energy industry is making money so that it can continue to invest in infrastructure, new resources, and the supply chain and workforce. I'd much rather be in a world where we're all employed working to expand the energy industry versus a time when the energy industry is slowing down, prices are, you know, struggling, and they can't make those investments. Because keep in mind, the oil and gas industry are a main component of our economy. So many things are derived from oil and natural gas. And if we fail to produce that oil and natural gas affordably, abundant, and accessibly, then the rest of the economy feels those negative impacts.
Right.
And I, for one, am tired of paying, what is it, $6-$7 now for a dozen eggs? You know, milk's up, everything's up. It's just so expensive. I can't go to the grocery store without spending $100, and I don't even know what I get at the grocery store anymore.
Yeah, carry like two plastic bags full of stuff out of there, and you're pushing $100. Yeah.
I got a 3-year-old. She eats a lot, right? Yeah. You know, I got mouths to feed now. I feel like a mama bird going out and like trying to find the worm to bring back and everything.
Right. Yeah.
Oh man, Biden administration's oil and gas drilling approvals outpace Trump's, according to. I don't know if I believe that. The Center for Biological Diversity, federal data shows that the Biden administration has approved 6,000 permits for oil and gas drilling on public lands. That has outpaced the Trump administration's permits by 100 or 200, according to this calculation. The Biden administration's policy on fossil fuel expansion contradicts the clear climate science that fossil fuel growth must be stopped and governments must phase out fossil fuels. I'm starting to pick up that this article might be a little biased. You know, was it lies, damn lies, and statistics, DC?
Right.
Because I also think, and even if these numbers are true or accurate, they also forget that the Trump administration, he was being sued by every environmental group, leftist, everything that they could to stop him from developing oil and natural gas, too. So I think there's two sides to every story. Oil and gas industry mergers dropped 13% during 2022. Forbes reports that in its annual report detailing activity among mergers and acquisitions, or M&A, for the upstream sector, the oil and gas industry saw a significant decline during 2022. They also released data that there was only about 160 deals totaling $58 billion for the calendar year, with just 26 transactions totaling $13 billion coming in the fourth quarter. Overall, the analysts say that the average deal value fell by about 20%. And that's interesting because I expected to see more of that. Maybe that'll happen as prices come back down and companies who had to take on more debt find themselves having to make difficult decisions. So it'll be interesting to see what 2023 looks like in that regard. Manchin bill slaps back at Biden in the EV tax credit fight. E&E News is reporting that the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Chair Joe Manchin took another swipe at the Biden administration Wednesday, releasing legislation that would stop the Treasury Department from issuing subsidies for consumer electric vehicles that don't comply with strict sourcing requirements for batteries and battery minerals. The West Virginia Democrat brought out the American Vehicle Security Act of 2023. A bill that would bar automakers from making an end-around sourcing requirements under the newly minted Inflation Reduction Act, or IRA. Moreover, Manchin's office suggested Tuesday that the bill would force some EV buyers who got a tax credit to return the money. It is interesting. We've covered this on the show before, the idea of, okay, if you're going to force the country to move to the green economy, to electric vehicles, to solar and wind, why aren't there requirements that they have to source all that stuff from the United States? We have ways to develop those minerals. We have ways to build these products. Yet, most of these products or the feedstocks for the products are coming from overseas, especially from countries that aren't particularly in line with our values and our ideals. So I'm a big proponent of forcing countries to do that. Now, one of the reasons people say, well, it's just too expensive to build those products here in the United States, or we would have to open up mines to get at lithium and cobalt to build these products. So people are fine with out of sight, out of mind, third world countries often using slave or child labor to develop these products and ship them here to the United States. So we feel good about using them instead of, you know, sourcing them under the same standards that we hold all other industries to, an industry just like the oil and gas industry, which we've discussed here, meets some of the strictest, actually, I'm going to say it, the strictest standards in the world when it comes to developing resources. So again, we should be developing more of our homegrown resources, whether they're fossil fuels or alternative energies, products, things like that. And shipping them to the world, because the world will improve both from an environmental and climate standpoint, but from a social economic standpoint, if we are the producers of these products. And I stand by that. U.S. oil sector seeks flexibility on methane rules. you know, constantly being attacked for methane emissions, and the oil and gas industry is constantly fighting this administration, President Joe Biden's administration. They are seeking compromises. The latest article here discusses that large oil and gas facilities will begin paying $900 for each metric ton of methane emitted above a minimum emission intensity under parts of the Inflation Reduction Act that will start to impose the penalty on leaks of greenhouse gas emissions. The fees will be $1,200 per ton in 2025, then $1,500 in all subsequent years. But it will fall to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to figure out exactly how to collect the waste emission charge through regulations aimed at the regulations are supposed to be proposed by March. Oil industry officials ahead of that have raised questions of how the charge will work. They're asking for changes such as not imposing a charge on methane that escapes through unburned flares. Oil industry officials say the EPA needs to provide clear guidance on how to calculate these emission thresholds, including any potential calculations on converting volume to weight, because they say ambiguity could be grounds for potential fines and audits by federal officials. It's frustrating. You know, these kinds of efforts are, I don't think they're as helpful as they set out to be, or at least they're sold to the public. The oil and gas industry is doing a phenomenal job across the board. And I'm not saying there are bad eggs or bad players, but all in all, the oil and gas industry is leading in terms of emissions reductions. We are in the business of capturing these products and getting them to market, not just letting them vent up into the air or disappear. So as a country, we have seen exponential growth of oil and natural gas products, and we've seen almost an equally impressive reduction of greenhouse gas emissions intensities. So the fact remains that now that we have to pay even more as an industry, there's just so much ambiguity, and it's probably one of the biggest criticisms of the EPA and other federal agencies engaged in this act, is that the ambiguity allows for them to take advantage of the system, whether it's in fining or collecting fines, or, you know, downright even harassing the industry as it's trying to develop responsibly. And that kind of negative interaction sometimes stifles innovation as companies are trying their best to not get fined or keep up with the ever changing or what do they call it? The goal line when the goal line moves on you.
Moving the goal posts. Yeah,
there you go. Moving the goal posts on you. The industry is constantly having to deal with that, and it can lead to negative innovation. Instead of just working with the energy industry, again, as I talk about this olive branch, work together. Let's highlight the successes. Let's double down on those successes. Let's expand them. Let's make them the industry standards. But again, I really think this just comes down to a new way to tax without calling it a tax, right? You and I and the American voters don't want to get taxed anymore. So what do politicians do on both sides of the aisle? They figure out ways to, you know, impose fees and taxes on the products that you and I want to consume. You know, at the end of the day, who pays for this? While the oil and gas industry will be the ones writing the check, you and I, DC, will pay for this.
Right.
And I just don't see how it's going to – it's not going to result in as much of a – or if any – net positive environmental impact. So in a time where, as we just talked about before, it's so expensive to even go to the grocery store, I don't think we should be adding more taxes onto things we need, like energy.
Exactly.
Clear energy spending beats fossil fuels for the first time. For the first time ever, the world investors poured as much money into low carbon energy products as they did into fossil fuel ones last year, but still fell short on what is necessary to reach climate goals. The chief conclusion in the report Thursday from the market analyst firm Bloomberg NEF found global annual spending on a range of low carbon technologies, including renewables, heat pumps, electric vehicles, hydrogen, nuclear power, and carbon capture, crossed the $1 trillion mark in 2022 for the first time. The analysts considered project investments such as financing for battery storage, wind farms, other technologies, and they also included sales of electric cars and or heat pumps. The invested $1.1 trillion in clean energy was 31% higher than 2021, according to the analysis. again, how much of that is government subsidies, government direct investment, pushing the industry towards that? And then we also started at the top of the show, DC, discussing how places like Germany, which have been leading the world in this conversion over to renewable energy, are turning back on coal plants because it won't meet their demands. Imagine if we just put a fraction of that $1 trillion back into infrastructure and then a fraction of that $1 trillion into efficiency projects, what our end result will be. And I bet, and I'm willing to say, that it would be equally as impressive in terms of environmental benefit if we just made those key investments. But with that being said, let's go from one impressive possibility to another. Fender's Fast Facts. What do you have for us, Rusty?
Thank you, Bill and DC. And back on January 31st, 1986, talk about developments in medicine. Mary Lund of Minneapolis, Minnesota, was the first female recipient of an artificial heart. She actually received a donor heart. Brand new technology just came out in early 1985, the year before, in 1986. We figured we would take a look back at some of the big accomplishments, the big landmarks in medicine. 3D printing. Yep, finally something that would have seemed futuristic not too long ago. Incredible opportunities. 3D printing is already being used to create dental implants and prosthetics, and also technology in 3D printed organs, which could be used to test new drugs and even eliminate the need for animal testing. It's pretty unbelievable. Good. Yeah. Nice. Gene therapy, DC. Gene therapy is now used by the NHS to treat certain cases of blindness. And it holds promise for a wide range of other diseases, including heart disease, hemophilia, and cystic fibrosis. The first gene therapy trial was launched in 1990. Successfully treating a then 4-year-old girl with a rare genetic disease. That's gene therapy. Another big medical breakthrough was insulin. Diabetes is an extremely serious but generally well-controlled disease. Thanks to our understanding of how lifestyle choices can help control symptoms, insulin was first used as a treatment for diabetes in 1922. Oh. It was, 100 years ago. It was discovered the previous year by scientists at the University of Toronto, Canada. Before the discovery was made, type 1 diabetes could not successfully be treated. Insulin, big deal, very expensive. Okay. Germ therapy, DC. Did you know it took until the 19th century for people to accept that disease is carried by germs? You may have heard of French chemist Louis Pasteur, who proved that fermentation of wine and souring of milk are caused by living organisms. Nobody believed it before. Yeah. Pasteur was the first to apply germ theory to surgery back in 1865. That's pretty interesting, D.
Wow. All right.
Epidemiology. John Snow definitely didn't know nothing, as people said. It's bad grammar, but that's what people said. A London physician, John Snow, is widely regarded as the father of epidemiology, the study of patterns and disease in a population. It started with cholera, an incredible, common, and very deadly disease at the time. It was not caused by bad air, as 99% of the world thought. It was actually caused by a disease, which is also an offshoot of cancer. Anesthesia. There's no doubt that surgeries save lives. Operations considered relatively commonplace today would have been regarded as impossible, either because they would have taken too long or because the limited pain relief available at the time, like pure opium, was insufficient. Back in October 1846 in Boston, anesthesia was used to remove a tumor from a patient's neck. DC, what is the number one breakthrough in all of medicine? Back in 1796, this process was invented by Edward Jenner. 1796, one of the biggest breakthroughs of all time in medicine used to this very day.
Medicine, 1796. Oh, man. I am, I gotta think here. 1796.
We just went through a mass form of this during COVID.
I'm going with injections, like what I call vaccinations.
Yes, absolutely. Wow. Very good. Very good. I would not have known this. The coronavirus pandemic actually reinforced vaccinations. The first ever successful vaccine was smallpox in 1796 by Dr. Edward Jenner. He observed that milkmaids milking cows caught cowpox, and they seemed to avoid catching smallpox, giving him the idea to stimulate the immune system with a less dangerous or dead part of the germ. So he took the dead germs from smallpox, re-injected them back into the girl, and she built up an immunity to any dead germ injected into the person.
Ah.
That is unbelievable, isn't it?
How about that?
An estimated 300 to 500 million people lost their lives to the disease in the 19th century. Now there's only about less than 3,000.
Okay.
That's incredible. Incredible. Vaccination, very good day. Some breakthroughs in modern medicine as this week's fun facts.
All right, Rusty, thank you for that. Your fest and or fun facts here on the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and I'm DC Taylor. Please stay here for more.
You've probably heard a lot about natural gas and how it's helping to bolster America's long-term energy security. But did you know that the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania is home to an abundance of natural gas? This formation is the second largest natural gas field in the world, and the reason why Coterra Energy is investing billions of dollars in the production of this valuable resource. By doing so, we're helping America become a world leader in energy production. We're also helping to generate a stronger local economy by creating hundreds of thousands of jobs and paying millions in taxes and royalties to landowners, farmers, and dairy producers. Clean-burning American natural gas also helps our country reduce energy costs, improves air quality, and protects the environment. Here's to securing our nation's energy future and creating economic prosperity for today's farmers and the generations that follow. Coterra Energy, responsibly producing clean energy for all.
Yeah, the benefits are very good. The benefits are all day one here. The dental health, vision, everything is top-notch. Everything is very good.
Drivers wanted.
The 401k plan. We have a 6% matching program. The medical, there's a health spending account, and you could use that for co-pays. You could use that for prescription drugs. You could use that for anything just to help along with deductibles. And then you could put in from your paycheck, it's tax exempt. You could put in so much bi-weekly, and then that helps out too because it is before taxes. So.
If you're looking for steady year-round work with a company that cares about you and your family, at GDS, you will drive locally and be home after every shift. Get all the details and advance your career with GDS, a division of Cabot Oil and Gas, where you'll drive the newest fleet on the road.
The steady schedule, the 4-2 schedule for a driver, a 4-2 schedule is great.
Gas Search Drilling Services. Get the phone number at gassearchdrilling.com.
Lindy Corporation is a pipeline and infrastructure company, and Lindy is proud to work in the Marcellus region, towns and cities, and beyond. Apply at lindyco.com. And remember, if Lindy wasn't hiring yesterday, chances are we will be hiring tomorrow.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and I'm DC Taylor. Last couple of weeks, we've been playing for you the State of American Energy 2023 program from the American Petroleum Institute, and you can find the entire thing at api.org. Here is the conclusion, part three, the remainder of State of American Energy 2023.
The core of our energy needs are still going to be fulfilled by American oil and American natural gas. And what's great about coming to a place like Midland and Odessa and the Permian Basin is because I get to see and meet the people who are doing it every single day.
All forms of energy are coming from here. And I think education about that should, you know, get out to the rest of the country. You know, I think a lot of people think of the Permian just as oil and gas, and that's really about it.
In Midland, Odessa, we say we all are in the oil field. Regardless what business we're in, we're all in the oil field. And so every time the ebb and flow of anything like that, it impacts all of us. It impacts this restaurant, who walks in, who doesn't walk in. It impacts our ability to source groceries.
There's sometimes this idea of, Permian Basin, West Texas, dry West Texas, it's fine, we don't need them. But that's such a missed opportunity. We have the brightest men and women out here who are working day in and day out, who either grew up here, have moved here, so that they can work in the energy industry.
People have stepped up in amazing ways to make sure that we are all proud to be a part of West Texas and to operate and to live here.
And I would challenge anyone who comes out to West Texas, meet the guys and gals that are doing the hard work. They are working to provide a better life for their family. Who can argue with that?
Our nation's capital. Behind me, solutions to America's energy challenges are debated nearly every day. How do we make enough energy for our growing country? And how do we do it responsibly and affordably? These are big questions, and the answers are increasingly complex. That's why it's the American Petroleum Institute's charge to keep Washington, D.C. focused on U.S.-made solutions, not just the debate. Hi, I'm Amanda Eversole, Chief Advocacy Officer at the American Petroleum Institute. Natural gas and oil are produced by leveraging data, research, and new technologies that emerge every year. The way we made energy in 2013 isn't the way we're making energy today. And the way we'll do it in 2033? Well, that's what this industry is constantly defining and refining. As we just heard, there are new and better solutions being made each day. But laws and regulations, well, they change at a much slower pace. And that's why Washington, D.C. has to make sure that laws and regulations champion American innovators that are developing the best solutions to meet consumer needs. Our government must create a system in which new technologies can be implemented, investments are encouraged, and more products can be made for our growing population. But what does that mean for Washington? What actions must be taken? Well, we have a few ideas. Up next, you'll hear from American Petroleum Institute CEO Mike Summers on how Washington can make the U.S. not only secure in its energy, but a leader for the world's energy future. From the tundra of Alaska to the Gulf Coast of Louisiana, we have the force of millions working towards achieving this. The solution is here, and we must pursue it together.
There's no doubt Washington, D.C. is an important place. But what happens in our nation's capital rarely gets its start there. The ideas, the innovation, the progress, all of that comes from the hardworking towns and cities, like right here in Midland, Texas. Across America, in any of the hundreds of communities that support the production, refinement, and distribution of energy, American energy is a cornerstone for our way of life. It runs our economy. It keeps our country safe. It powers our ability to innovate and do more than we ever dreamed possible. Over the last year, all of us have seen why energy policy really matters. We've seen it in our own lives, in our communities, and around the world. For decades, Washington, D.C. has debated policy pathways for reliable, affordable energy for everyone. But while the debate waged on, our industry stayed focused on delivering solutions. That's why I'm here today in Midland. The millions of men and women in America's natural gas and oil industry work hard every day and night to deliver reliable, affordable energy. And we stand ready to answer the call to produce more energy and to make it better, safer, and cleaner. But we need support from Washington. Either we strengthen our energy security or we become increasingly reliant on unstable regions of the world for our energy. The solution is here, but only if we chart a path for it to succeed. At API, we have a plan that champions the people who are innovating and advancing solutions for our energy future. It's a plan in three parts: make, move, and improve. It all starts with make. Because the basics of America's energy challenges are pretty straightforward. When it comes to energy, Americans are suffering under the biggest supply imbalance in over a generation. Between what we have and what we need to live our lives. And the government isn't doing enough to lessen it. Under the Biden administration, our government has leased fewer federal acres for oil and natural gas production than any other president since World War II, and has suggested no offshore leasing for years. That's despite the years it takes to plan, invest, permit,
and develop energy, and projections that America and the world will need oil for decades to come. Experts say demand for global oil and natural gas will increase tremendously over the next 30 years. In 2023 alone, it will increase by 2.7 million barrels a day. And if America doesn't meet that demand, then that demand will be met by other countries that may not share our values or be reliable partners, countries that don't work to protect their environment and their communities. So the first step to solving energy challenges is to harness the full potential of American natural gas and oil production, and do it now by increasing access on and offshore. Our industry is already taking on the challenge. But the greatest achievements will require Washington to work alongside us too. Producing more energy counts for very little if we can't get it where it needs to go. And that's why we need to focus on how we move energy to where it's needed most. Today, it often takes more time and money to get permission to build a pipeline than it takes to actually construct the pipeline itself. And the consequences are real. Americans in New England sometimes pay up to 8 times more for energy than people in Appalachia because the government won't approve a pipeline to move natural gas to states like Connecticut, Rhode Island, and Massachusetts. We need our government to greenlight more pipelines to safely move our energy across the U.S. and more terminals to let ships bring our energy around the world. So let's do it. Let's invest in energy infrastructure, streamline the review process, and remove needless bottlenecks so we can harness the full potential of American energy. This industry is filled with so much potential, not just to meet demand, but to meet demand in ways that are safe for our environment. We've already created groundbreaking emissions reduction technologies, and more are on the way. Americans agree that taking care of this amazing land and reducing emissions is important. The question is, how do we work to improve together? It's not regulation alone. It's innovation. It's science and skill. It's innovators like the men and women who work here, whose ingenuity powered the shale revolution. By replacing much of the coal use with natural gas to make electricity, America lowered its CO2 emissions in the power sector more than any single one of Washington's climate policies ever has. We've reduced our CO2 emissions to some of the lowest levels in a generation, all while demand and consumption have continued to rise. We're innovating in our production processes to slash methane emissions intensity, a potent greenhouse gas, and we're working every day to find ways to bring them down even further. Not only can we lower U.S. emissions, but we can also capture some of the remaining emissions. To do that, we need stronger support for the implementation of carbon capture. And what about new fuels like hydrogen? Recent studies have shown that new fuels coming online show great promise in further meeting growing demand while also reducing emissions. We can fix this together. America has enough resources to supply ourselves and our allies for decades to come. This wasn't always the case. For decades, presidents of every political party have put a premium on producing more energy in America to make our country more self-sufficient. They know it's not just good for our country, but for the world. Yet for some reason, policymakers in Washington are choosing another path, one with real consequences. Now is the time for Washington to help. Our industry is ready to do the work to make, move, and improve American energy. The solution is here, in America. Let's talk about that so-called energy transition for a minute. The truth of the matter is we're gonna need all sources of energy in the future, right? We know that there are gonna be a lot more renewables in the energy mix in the future, because world population is going up by 2 billion people by 2050. And
energy needs are expected to actually go up by 50%. So we shouldn't really talk about an energy transition. I like to talk about an energy addition.
I think we have to stop thinking about the Republicans and the Democrats, but remind ourselves that we're all Americans. We're all in the same boat, and that is to make our communities better. And just get over the quibbling and the fighting and realize that, you know, we're all from the same country here. We should all want the same thing, and that's moving this country forward.
So let me tell you about a program that we run at the American Petroleum Institute. It's a group called Energy Citizens. It's a grassroots network of energy employees and community leaders and people who want to be involved in this industry. So I would encourage you, after our conversation today, to go and join what I think is going to be a real movement for energy reform in this country. Well, I want to thank everybody for being here today. It's an honor to be here in Midland, Texas, and especially to be here in the Permian Basin, the most prolific basin in the world, and the one that I know is going to lead the future for us to continue to produce affordable, reliable, and ever cleaner energy for the world. Thanks, everybody.
And there you have it, the State of American Energy 2023 presentation from the American Petroleum Institute. API.org is the website. You can find the entire thing there in case you you missed some of the earlier parts. Here on the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and I'm DC Taylor. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we will do the top five stories of the past week from MarcellusDrilling.com, and we'll also get to the jobs segment brought to us by Lackawanna College, their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Stay right here for more of the Shale Gas News. You've probably heard a lot about natural gas and how it's helping to bolster America's long-term energy security. But did you know that the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania is home to an abundance of natural gas? This formation is the second largest natural gas field in the world, and the reason why Coterra Energy is investing billions of dollars in the production of this valuable resource. By doing so, we're helping America become a world leader in energy production. We're also helping to generate a stronger local economy by creating hundreds of thousands of jobs and paying millions in taxes and royalties to landowners, farmers, and dairy producers. Clean-burning American natural gas also helps our country reduce energy costs, improves air quality, and protects the environment. Here's to securing our nation's energy future and creating economic prosperity for today's farmers and the generations that follow. Coterra Energy, responsibly producing clean energy for all.
Are you looking for work in the gas industry? Linde Corporation is always looking for good people. Apply at lindeco.com. Linde installs water lines, sewer lines, and gas lines. We're busy in the Marcellus region. Apply for your next career at lindeco.com.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's Continuing Education Department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and I'm DC Taylor. The jobs segment, we're exploring careers in the energy industries coming up in just a few minutes. First, the top five. Each weekday, Marcellus Drilling News locates and shares news from the Marcellus and Utica Shale. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month, so we use it as a barometer to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list of the top stories each week. So from MarcellusDrilling.com, here come your top five most read stories over the past 7 days. And coming in at number five, EQT eliminates about 9,000 natural gas-powered pneumatic devices. A couple weeks ago, EQT announced it had completed spending $28 million to dump all of its natural gas-powered pneumatic devices, almost 9,000 of them. The pneumatic controllers were replaced or retrofitted on all EQT production locations and compressor stations. At EQT, natural gas-powered pneumatic devices were the source of 39% of the company's 2021 production segment Scope 1 greenhouse gas emissions. Those stray emissions are now eliminated. So what are pneumatic devices and why is this a big deal? Pneumatic devices are pieces of equipment that use natural gas to operate other pieces of equipment, like opening and closing valves, turning on and off pumps, etc. Each time the device operates, there is the potential for a little puff of natural gas to escape into the atmosphere. There are many pneumatic devices used in the oil and natural gas industry, at wells and in compressor stations. EQT is blazing the trail in eliminating natural gas pneumatic devices, hoping others will follow. What did the company replace all those about 9,000 devices with? Three main alternatives were used: compressed air, nitrogen, and electric drives. Rusty?
Thanks, DC. Number four. The Fourth Circuit rules Antero can deduct some royalty expenses in West Virginia. Now, a group of landowners in Harrison and Doddridge counties in West Virginia sued Antero Resources, claiming the company had deducted post-production costs from royalties not allowed under the leases they had signed. So last year, the United States District Court for the Northern District of West Virginia ruled mostly in favor of the landowners. Antero appealed the case to the United States Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit last week. The judges of the Fourth Circuit issued their ruling. Nobody got everything they wanted. We'll call it a split decision. However, Antero did win the right to make deductions in certain circumstances. In the decision, the Fourth Circuit affirmed the district court's summary judgment order in part and vacated it in part. So the Fourth Circuit concluded that some of the leases prohibit Antero from deducting any post-production costs from landowners' royalties. But other leases, namely those that contain a, quote, market enhancement clause, end quote, do and will authorize certain deductions in certain circumstances.
Okay, here's last week's third most popular story on MarcellusDrilling.com. Antero Midstream wins $248 million lawsuit against Veolia regarding a West Virginia plant. Antero Midstream hired Veolia Water Technologies to build and operate a state-of-the-art frack wastewater recycling facility in Doddridge County, West Virginia, which began operations in 2017. The Clearwater Treatment Facility can process up to 60,000 barrels of wastewater per day, separating water, salt, and radioactive particles. Less than 2 years after it began operation, Antero suddenly shuttered the plant. What we didn't know until just recently is that a lawsuit ensued between Antero Midstream and Veolia over the shuttered plant. We searched high and low, but in the end, we could not put our hands on a copy of the lawsuit. The only way we know about the lawsuit is through a very brief article appearing a couple of weeks ago on the Seeking Alpha Investors website. Rusty?
Number 2D, Josh Shapiro nominates former NFL player to head the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection. Josh Shapiro has nominated Rich Negron, a former top official and deputy mayor of Philadelphia, to become the next secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection. Negron has some, not a lot of, but energy-related experience. He was vice president for 4 years at Commonwealth Edison, the largest electric utility in Illinois, handling regulatory policy and strategy, where his role was to push and promote so-called renewable energy, electric vehicles, and energy efficiency. He has zero oil and gas experience. Oh, and Mr. Negron briefly played for the Cleveland Browns and the New York Jets in his youth. In addition to appointing Negron, Shapiro is using two retreads from the Wolf administration for other key positions, the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, DCNR. Shapiro has nominated Cindy Adams Dunn, who has been secretary of DCNR under Wolf for a full 8 years, to continue on in that position for another 4 years. Dunn is the former head of the Radical Penn Future organization. That's an organization that tries to block all shale drilling in the state. Dunn's nomination is a big disappointment. What about Negron? From our perspective, the jury is still out. He may be okay. He may not be. See?
All right, here you go. The number one most read story on MarcellusDrilling.com. Last week, EQT, $5.2 billion deal to buy Tug Hill, extended additional year to close. Last September, EQT Corporation announced it's buying privately owned Tug Hill Operating's West Virginia shale assets for $5.2 billion. The deal adds 90,000 acres and 800 million cubic feet per day of production to EQT's existing massive portfolio. But then the Bidenistas at the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, got involved, slowing down the deal. Because of the FTC dragging its feet, EQT and Tug Hill recently renegotiated the timeline, adding a full year. The previous deadline to complete the deal was December 30th, 2022. The FTC requested more information in November, a prelude to the agency objecting to the deal, in our humble opinion. The original deal contemplated regulators signing off on the deal by December 5th and closing by the end of the year, but the FTC dragging its feet screwed that plan. So now the new deal is December 29th, or the new deadline, rather, December 29th, 2023. If the deal is not done by that date, either party, EQT or Tug Hill, can walk away with no penalty. As part of the newly renegotiated deadline, EQT has put $150 million into an escrow account as a sign of good faith. And there you go. The top five stories thousands of people read this past week on MDN. If you'd like to keep track of the latest Marcellus and Utica news each day, it's easy. Just subscribe to Marcellus Drilling News. Just go to MarcellusDrilling.com and click on the subscribe link. It's only $7.95 a month, or if you pay for the whole year, it's $79.50. And now it's time for the job segment. Checking out careers. You're looking for a new career in the energy industry? Well, we've got quite a listing for you, as we do every week. And it's the job segment brought to you by Lackawanna College, their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty.
And thank you, DC, in Pennsylvania. We'll start with Hydro Recovery, a brand new company, brand new job, looking for a water transfer technician that's based in Claremont. BlackRock Resources, looking for a distribution gas pipeline systems engineering technician. It's level one or level two out of Wexford. Talon Energy, looking for a production shift supervisor out of Bangor. TRC, looking for an ecologist that's remote in Pittsburgh. And then a project manager for the emissions testing unit. That's out of Monroeville, Pennsylvania, near Pittsburgh. Penn Hills Resources, looking for roustabouts, 10 positions out of Kane. GDS, looking for roustabouts, 10 positions out of Montrose. UGI Energy Services, looking for a natural gas construction and maintenance laborer out of Lancaster. Black and Veatch, looking for a process engineer. That's for their LNG oil and gas unit out of Harrisburg. Oil States Energy Services and an administrative assistant out of Towanda. And PP&L, looking for an engineering for their support division. That's remote from home 120 days, then based at their headquarters in Allentown. It's PP&L. In Ohio, Antera, looking for a foreman for their natural gas construction unit that's out of Toledo. Summit Midstream Partners, an opening for a measurement technician based in Jacobsburg. S2W Consulting just posted a job for an experienced gas compressor mechanic out of St. Clairsville. Amtech Oil Incorporated, an opening for an oil and gas production and operations manager out of Cambridge. Encino Energy, a measurement technician opening out of Carrollton. Duke Energy, an executive assistant level one that's out of Cincinnati. American Electric Power, a meter servicer out of Conshocton. And Nine Energy Services just posted a wireline operator position. It's out of Marietta. Let's move to West Virginia. Team Fischel, an opening for a supervisor for the natural gas distribution system. It's out of Charleston. Hope Gas posted a senior gas pipeline integrity specialist based in Clarksburg. Keystone Clearwater Solutions, an opening for a water transfer technician out of Wheeling. American Electric Power, an opening for an equipment operator out of Winfield. Shale Pro Energy Services, a well tender out of New Martinsville. TC Energy has a job listed for a repairman for their gas operations unit out of Matthias, and also heavy equipment operators out of Cameron. both for TC Energy. KLX Energy Services is opening for a field technician out of Bridgeport, and M, the letter M, Power Resources, an environmental specialist based in Fayetteville. In New York, Lindy, looking for an electrical engineer that's out of Niagara Falls. Con Ed, looking for a general utility worker out of Astoria, Queens. Gas Field Specialist, an opening for a hydrostatic tester and technician based in the Horseheads, Binghamton area. NYSEG, that's New York State Electric and Gas, looking for a supervisor for their construction and maintenance division of Oneonta, and a lead engineer for their electrical division based in Vestal, both for NYSEG. And Kinder Morgan, an opening for a pipeline crew leader based in Guilderland Center, New York. And those, as DC mentioned, the jobs this week, sponsored by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas, Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Thank you so much for finding your future here with the Shale Gas News on our network of stations. We'll see you back here same time, same radio stations next week. For Bill DeRosia, DC Taylor, I'm Rusty Fender. Thanks once again for listening to the Shale Gas News.